You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Philip Giraldi, the executive director of the Council for the National Interest, CNI, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that advocates for Middle East policies that serve the national interest. On their website, which is cnionline.org, CNI's mission is to encourage and promote a U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East that is consistent with American values, protects national interests, and contributes to a just solution of the Arab-Israeli conflict. CNI's goal is to restore a political environment in America in which voters and their elected officials are free from the undue influence and pressure of foreign countries and their partisans. CNI's website states that Mr. Giraldi is a recognized authority on international security and counterterrorism issues. He's a former CIA counterterrorism specialist and military intelligence officer who served 18 years in Turkey, Italy, Germany, and Spain. He was chief of base in Barcelona from 89 to 92, designated as the agency's senior officer for Olympic Games support. Since 92, he consulted for a number of Fortune 500 corporate clients. He was awarded an MA and PhD from the University of London in European History and holds a Bachelor of Arts with honors from the University of Chicago. He speaks Spanish, Italian, German, and Turkish. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Just four languages, Phil? That's all you could do?
Well, I have a little smattering of a couple of others, but
Okay. All right, good. Phil, CNI, the Council for the National Interest, very interesting organization. It seems that a couple of folks recently in the news, Mel Gibson, Oliver Stone, Helen Thomas, and now Rick Sanchez, all have something in common with the founder of CNI. They all voice their opinions about either Israel or Jews. Are we, Phil, as Americans, unable to speak our minds about these topics?
Well, I think, to be fair, there definitely is a taboo in place, particularly about being critical of the Israeli lobby's actions and the Israeli lobby being pretty much a function of major Jewish organizations in the United States. It's somehow not permitted, really, to make that connection. And beyond that, any criticism of Israel anywhere in the media or anywhere else in public is also considered to be something that is not completely acceptable.
Why and how have these topics become taboo?
It depends on how you look at the question. In my mind, basically, there has been a determined effort by major Jewish organizations to stifle any criticism of Israel in the media. And as these Jewish organizations have a great deal of leverage over the media, they've been largely successful. If one examines, for example, the narrative of what is going on in the Middle East in the European media and compares it with the United States, you'll see that it's virtually a completely different story in that the Israeli mistreatment of the Palestinians is a regular news feature in Europe and other places in the world. And in the United States, the balance is completely the other way. If something happens to an Israeli, it's front page news. If something happens to any number of Palestinians, it won't appear or will appear on page 27.
And why do you think that is?
The major media either has people who are what I would call gatekeepers who control the type of news that appears, or they're very sensitive to the fact that there's an economic issue here, which is basically Jewish advertisers, Jewish contributors will cease to advertise or cease to contribute, or at least this is the perception, if the medium is too critical of Israel. And certainly, as you pointed out before, there's a lot of evidence to support that. People like the founders of CNI, two congressmen, McCloskey and Finley, lost their seats in Congress because they were too openly critical of Israel. Senator William Fulbright was another leading political figure. Chuck Percy, senator from Illinois, another one. All these people lost their seats because of the perception that they were too critical of Israel.
Is the fact that many in the media, in positions of power in the media, are Jewish, does that have anything to do with this?
I would say that it has a lot to do with it, in that many of the Jews who are in these prominent positions in the media are particularly sensitive about Israeli issues. They may not be rabid supporters of Bibi Netanyahu. In fact, I think one could reasonably argue that most of them hold their nose when they're supporting Israel. They feel it's important to support Israel no matter what Israel does. So I would say that's a major element in it. And again, it's an element that people feel very sensitive about talking about, because the fact is that Jews have been persecuted prosecuted through history, and this card is played quite often in terms of defending Israel, just as the Holocaust is frequently cited to defend Israel, even when Israel is doing something totally unacceptable. It's a complicated and very sensitive issue, and an issue that makes many people feel nervous.
Sounds like they have a stranglehold on Americans voicing their opinions, and that's just not right.
I would absolutely agree with that, and that's why CNI exists. CNI basically exists to open the debate, to say, let's have a free debate on whether Israel is actually an asset to the United States, or whether the United States should be giving Israel unlimited support politically and also considerable support financially. There should be serious debate about these issues, but because the narrative is such that Israel is constantly portrayed in the U.S. media as a victim, the debate never takes place.
Phil, how did you become involved in this topic?
Basically, when I was working for the government, I had a lot of interaction with other government officials and intelligence officers of various kinds. And through them, I developed a wider understanding of what exactly was going on in the Middle East in terms of American interests. And that was essentially how it started. And once you get into this story, you, as you probably know yourself, you learn more and more about it, and the story becomes more and more depressing.
When was CNI founded, Phil?
It was founded 19 years ago and has been basically an organization that emphasizes that we're not politically partisan in any way. We're not Republicans or Democrats. We're basically people that are supportive of what the name of the organization is, Council for the National Interest, and the national interest is the key here. What's good for the United States and what's good for the American people?
But it seems like these interest groups have been very successful in subverting the national interest in place of a foreign country. How did they do that?
Well, I would say they've been supremely successful in doing that in terms of making U.S. foreign policy conditional on an Israeli veto, at least insofar as it relates to the Middle East and probably in a broader sense towards any Muslim country in the world. So this has been a very, in a way, a subversive operation as far as I'm concerned. They've done it through control of the media. And also the other thing that they've worked very effectively is their control of Congress and the White House on these issues. They have lobbied very, very effectively to the point where any politician who wants to be successful in office or stay in office has to be looking over his shoulder in terms of what the Israeli lobby would like him to say.
Right. And of course, as you said, on these issues, which are issues that are right now relevant to Israel, but it could be a rather slippery slope that if they decided to move their influence machine away from that area and into another, they would probably be just as successful, wouldn't you think?
Obviously, the formula works. If you have a lot of money that you're willing to apply to the issue, that enables you to build up a big staff that lobbies very effectively in Washington and also puts pressure on the media, yeah, I suppose the formula would work for just about anything. I suppose there are certain issues that it wouldn't work for, but I mean, if you're basically lobbying on behalf of a specific interest group or country, it probably is a formula that could be quite successful for others.
It seems like now leading up to Election Day, which is coming up in a few days, that more and more candidates are very vocal in their support of Israel, even though this is the United States of America and we have many issues here that concern most Americans. In fact, if you look online, there's a story on an Israeli website. The title is Israel Takes Center Stage in Illinois Election Campaign. In Fight for Congress Seat in Illinois, a struggle between two Jewish candidates, Israel has made its way to the top of the political agenda. The contest, who does more to protect the Jewish interest? And it gets back to what you were saying. How could it be that in the United States of America, where two congressional candidates are running, vying for the same seat, and what made its way to the top of the agenda is a foreign country? How could that be? What about the economy? What about any of the other stuff that affects Americans?
Well, one of the things I've been wondering is how nobody's even talking about the two wars we're fighting. So, yeah, this is a mystery. My recommendation for the voters in Illinois would be that please vote against both of them. Here we have exactly as you put it. People are arguing about who's being a better friend of Israel. This is not what the argument should be. And anyone who even makes that argument should be, in a sense, disqualified from running for higher office. And this is not the first time it's happened, of course. Joe Lieberman used to play that card in Connecticut when he was running as an independent. And it also came up, I believe, in the California gubernatorial race not so long ago, where two candidates were vying or arguing to the extent that they were friends of Israel, or one was portrayed as being not a good friend of Israel. You know, this becomes an important thing for the media to play with, to demonstrate that Israel is close to every American heart. Well, there are a lot of us out here in the hinterlands who don't feel that way, that we have major problems in the United States, economic problems being foremost, and we're giving $3 billion a year to Israel, which is one of the richest countries in the world. So this doesn't make any sense. And really, what CNI and other organizations are trying to do is to bring this out into the open. Let's talk about this. If there's a good reason to give Israel $3 billion, I can't imagine what it is. But if there is a good reason, tell us what it is. If there is not a good reason, use that money to do something here in the United States. So this whole thing is ridiculous from the point of view of the U.S. national interest, and it's time for it to stop.
Tell our listeners, Phil, about some of CNI's campaigns and their successes, or failures for that matter.
CNI, through the years, has had a number of campaigns, has tried a number of avenues to open up the debate. For example, they've sponsored speakers who will go to Capitol Hill and speak in a conference room in one of the House or Senate office buildings. They've sponsored full-page ads in places like the New York Times, calling into question the Israeli relationship. They were extremely effective. And now, with CNI moving forward, we're considering other ways of perhaps getting to a wider audience. We're considering, for example, billboards as something we can do. Personally, I have been a contributor to a number of sites that are critical of the Israeli relationship in a sensible way. And so I write articles on a regular basis that appear on places like the American Conservative Magazine, Ron Paul's Campaign for Liberty, and also in a website called antiwar.com, which is opposed to the wars that the United States has been fighting over the past 10 years. So we try to get the word out that there's an organization here, CNI, which is very interested in bringing in a bit of accountability, bit of transparency in terms of what's going on, and in terms of airing out these issues so the American public will be better informed and will actually demand that the politicians do something that's good for the United States for a change.
Is it really realistic to think that your average American not only would take the time to understand this issue and wrap their minds around it, but actually take some sort of action? You would think that it would offend your average American that America isn't coming first, but a foreign nation is, but it doesn't seem to be having any impact on them.
Well, the problem is it's not being portrayed that way. The narrative is that Israel is a victim and that Israel is side by side with the United States in its war against terrorism, which is also a myth. The fact is that since the American public is not hearing what you just described, that Israel is essentially a liability, they don't know it. And part of the problem is the media. Part of the problem is that Congress just doesn't care. At the same time, there have been recent opinion polls indicating that 75% of Americans, that's three-quarters of Americans, want the United States to essentially stay neutral in the Israel-Palestine conflict and basically butt out of it. And that's a pretty strong indication that if the American voters actually ever had a choice and were not voting for two candidates, both of whom were pledging their love of Israel, they might actually vote in another way. So the point is to get a grassroots movement going where people are better informed and people will start demanding some changes. That's what we'd like to see.
How can your average American help out CNI?
One way they can help us out is coming to our website and seeing what we stand for. And if they feel that what we're doing is something that is something they would personally support, they can contribute to us. But even if they don't contribute to us, we are very interested in hearing from them and working with them and even featuring on our website and in our other publications things that they've written or thoughts that they've had. So we're very interested in engaging the American public on this issue.
Okay, and again, that website is cnionline.org. And I was looking through the website. I did see that ad you took out in the New York Times. I guess that was in August of this year, where it said, nice picture of the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Question on top is, how do we stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons and funding terror? Help end America's reliance on foreign oil. Did you get any flack from the pro-Israel, pro-Jewish community about that?
Well, when we run newspaper ads, yes, we do get pressure, not directly, but the pressure is directed at the publication. And the New York Times, for example, took considerable heat when we had a major full-page ad back a few years ago questioning the whole nature of the relationship with Israel. The Times was reluctant to run it, but they did, to their credit. But then there was considerable pressure from Jewish advertisers, and the Times basically indicated that they probably would not repeat the experience. This is how it works. If you're too successful in pressing the alternative narrative about Israel and the U.S. relationship with Israel, the lobby reacts and the lobby goes after you. I've been personally accused a number of times of being anti-Semitic. Alison Weir, who is the current president of CNI, has been placed on the top 10 hit list for Abe Foxman's anti-defamation league, indicating that she obviously has touched some nerves.
Phil, are you anti-Semitic?
No, this whole argument of who is an anti-Semite and everything is ridiculous. It's trotted out constantly if you're critical of Israel. And the political commentator Joe Sobran, who recently died, said that anti-Semitism today means people that Jewish organizations hate. So it's all been turned on its head in terms of, you know, what this means. It's just something that's used as a tactic to make critics look as if they're evil. That's why CNI has been very effective, because CNI is totally respectable. We have ex-congressmen, we have ex-ambassadors on our board. Harriet Fulbright, the widow of Senator Fulbright, was on our board. So we're in a sense trying to move this debate into an area where people can debate the issue without being smeared. And that's essentially what we want to do.
You're in Washington, D.C. Anything coming up that would be interesting for the public? You said some billboards, any conferences, anything like that?
We're going to be attending a number of conferences. Right now, we're working on which ones to go after. We're interested in working both sides of the political aisle. And indeed, if people who are listening to this have ideas about groups and similar organizations that might be interested in hearing our message, Alison Weir and I both go out and speak. I've done a lot of speaking in front of some of Ron Paul's supporters. I've even done some speaking in front of Tea Party people and tried to make them understand that there is a connection between a really messed up foreign policy and really messed up domestic policies. So they sometimes don't get that. We're doing a lot of that. We'll be attending a number of conventions in the next few months. The American Conservative Association is having its annual convention in February. We're going to have a table there. We're also starting to work with veterans groups. It's kind of a smorgasbord at the moment. We're looking at a lot of different options and a lot of alternatives, and any feedback we get from people that are out there that are concerned about this issue would be appreciated.
Philip Giraldi, the Executive Director for the Council for the National Interest. I want to thank you so much, Phil, for taking the time out of your day to explain this to our listeners, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.